On this edition of the Iowa Business Report.
That can't be a bad thing. And I think it's a good thing in terms of getting younger people into the workforce.
Iowa Workforce Development handles far more than jobless benefits. We'll hear from the department's director. This is National Manufacturing Month. Iowa's governor offers her thoughts. And in our business profile, we'll revisit a conversation about the real thing. This is the Iowa Business Report for the first weekend of October 2021.
The Iowa Business Report is a copyrighted production of Totally Iowa Media, which is solely responsible for its content. For more, click on the radio programs button at totallyiowa.com. Here is Jeff Stein.
The Iowa Workforce Development Department is hosting a series of roundtables across the state, helping to bring employers and employees together to assess needs. One of those was in downtown Waterloo this past Wednesday, after which I talked with IWD Director Beth Townsend about Iowa's workforce issues.
We're having roundtable discussions around the state where we meet with employers and workforce partners. We want to hear from them what the effects of the pandemic have been on them, what kind of challenges they're facing, what are their needs, where are the gaps. You know, we haven't been able to get out into the community since before March 2020, and I am a big believer in getting out and meeting people face-to-face, coming to where you are. I want you to know the people that work at Iowa Workforce Development. I want you to know who I am. It's important to me that I meet people in the community.
Greatest challenge for employers these days is what, in your view, from what you've heard from talking to people around the state?
Oh, hands down, finding sufficient workers.
Number, quality, or both?
It depends on who you're talking to. Some employers will say, I can't get enough applicants. Others will say, I can't get enough applicants that have the right skills. So we are hearing different messages from different employers depending on location and industry.
So that makes it doubly difficult, I assume, for someone in your position or for government trying to help stimulate the workforce, the economy, because for years we said, well, it snows. If people don't like snow, they're not going to come to Iowa. So you have to change some of the messaging, but it's a double whammy, if you will, where you need just a volume of people, but then they also need to be specifically trained, educated, skilled. What are some of the things that the department is doing to help address those two very different issues?
Well, we're trying to get employers to leverage the experience of the pandemic in a positive way. I mean, I really think we're at the cusp nationally in terms of what our workforce is going to look like. We knew there were going to be changes. The pandemic certainly accelerated that. Automation has occurred more rapidly than it might otherwise. But I think it's also accelerated the teleworking phenomenon in a very productive way. I think it's also inspired a lot of people to become more entrepreneurial in their life plans. I just think we should take advantage of this as an opportunity. And employers, I think, are at a point in their thought process and planning where they're thinking more creatively and more out of the box than they ever have before. They needed to do that during the pandemic to solve for workforce issues related to people not being able to get out and work or not being able to work from home. And we're carrying that forward into this workforce shortage. So I think we're at a great time to kind of rebuild the way that we work. That can't be a bad thing. And I think it's a good thing in terms of getting younger people into the workforce and helping shape it in a way that they're inspired by and in a way that they want to work.
We have heard a lot about something, I guess, is being called the Great Resignation, where there are people who post-pandemic, where work had been in person and such a big part of their lives, well, either they weren't able to work or they did the telework or whatever, or just having experienced loss within their own circle of friends and family and just said, you know, it's not worth it. I'm going to just get out of it altogether. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a lot of that through data or anecdotal evidence of people saying, I just feel life is too short to spend another 10 years pushing a rock up a hill?
Well, we did see a surge in retirement of Iowans over 65 this last August. But I do think that retirements, I think Iowa benefited from baby boomers who continued to work well past 65 pre-pandemic. They were making a good living. They liked what they did. And so they just continued. They were healthy. They were living longer. So people were working longer. And the pandemic has certainly affected that equation. I also think we've all are experiencing to some extent, especially industries that were really hard hit by the pandemic, some pandemic fatigue. Industries like retail that worked throughout the pandemic and worked long hours. For my own team, we worked mandatory overtime from March of 2020 till August of 2021. So number one, that shows you how dedicated the staff at Iowa Workforce Development is to serving the citizens of Iowa. They worked mandatory overtime for almost 18 months, almost without complaint, to serve their fellow Iowans. But that does lead to burnout and fatigue because you can only do that for so long. So I think probably that's part of what we're seeing in terms of retirements. It may also explain if we're seeing some retirements for people that aren't quite 65. But it just felt like I've worked 3 years in the last year and a half, and I'm ready to go.
I always think when I see a news release, wow, we are so far from the old job service office, aren't we, in terms of what you folks do. And people will remember, you don't have to be that old to remember, the sign that said job service, and that's where you went for unemployment, and that was it. The things that you folks do now, give us a sense, lastly, of the breadth of services and opportunities and resources that are available under this broad umbrella of an agency that is far different from what some of us grew up with.
That's a great question, Jeff, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the things that we love to do that we did pre-pandemic and we're getting back to doing now. You know, when you're facing the loss of a job, whether that's you're coming out of college or you've worked somewhere for 20 years and you haven't had to do a job search, when you come in our doorways, we're going to sit down with you and we're going to talk to you about what are your interests, what's your education, what kind of job do you want to do? Do you have any interest in training? We're going to help you find training programs that work for you. Oftentimes, we have funding available to pay for those training programs. We're going to help match you with employers who are looking exactly for the skills that you have. And that's true for every Iowan, whether you are just a regular person or whether you have some type of barrier. We love helping individuals with disabilities, or we love helping individuals. We have 5,000 people coming out of our correction facilities every year. We need to be utilizing their skills and abilities and giving them second chances, matching them up in an environment and with an employer that's going to help them stay on the straight and narrow, because I do believe that most of them want to do that, and given the right opportunities and seeing and having a good path forward, they will do that. We need to diversify our workforce. We need to diversify our population. And one way to do that is to make sure that your management and your workforce reflect the diversity that you want to see in the community. So it's an exciting time to be able to expand the number of Iowans and the color of Iowans that are coming into the state and how they fit throughout our workforce ecosystem. So we're just in a really great place to do a lot of different things that we haven't done before. I think everybody's probably tired of the pandemic for a lot of good reasons, but I think it gives us an opportunity to just change the face of workforce in Iowa in a very, very positive and accelerated way.
And again, this is not a perfect analogy, but there are people who are in a job and they're just very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't think about doing something else unless they're forced to,
mm-hmm.
either because of a work slowdown and they're put on the bench, or a pandemic. And so instead of looking at it as a challenge, sometimes there's an opportunity, an even better opportunity that comes out of what appears to be an insurmountable challenge.
Well, Jeff, that couldn't be more true today than ever. We have over 80,000 jobs in Iowa currently. Most employers have increased their starting pay. A lot of employers are advertising starting pay at $15 an hour. And those are for lower skilled jobs. So you can only imagine what they're paying for middle and high skilled jobs. So you're right. While it's a disappointment if you're being moved on and you weren't ready and really didn't want to do that, but it really is an opportunity. And it's an opportunity to do something new and exciting and different. And it's also an opportunity because we have training programs available at low or no cost that will help you get where you want to go in a relatively short amount of time.
Beth Townsend is Director of Iowa Workforce Development. We spoke in Waterloo on Wednesday, September 29th. Two websites to consult for more information: iowaworkforcedevelopment.gov and futureReadyIowa.gov. Still to come, the impact of manufacturing, and things go better with this business profile. You're listening to the Iowa Business Report. The Iowa Business Report is presented by Advance Iowa. The first ever family business conference will be held in Des Moines on Thursday, November 11th. Designed to connect, educate, and provide helpful resources to Iowa family businesses. For more, go to advanceiowa.com and click on the Events tab. October is Manufacturing Month in this country. I asked Governor Kim Reynolds to talk about the large and important role manufacturing plays in our state economy.
Yeah, it's the largest sector of our GDP, actually, and it is true. I mean, people think of we are a leader when it comes to agriculture, but actually the largest sector that contributes to our economy is advanced manufacturing. And you know, that a lot of that is tied to agriculture. So, you know, it's a derivative of that. But we're very blessed. We have just phenomenal companies across the state. We work with them extensively. You know, right now, as I talk to a lot of the manufacturing businesses, they've had great years. Their last 2 years have been some of their best that they've ever had. And just so much potential to do even more. It is just a, like every other sector, struggling with workforce. It continues to be, you know, one of the number one barriers to our capacity to grow this economy at a rate that I believe we can. 11% is not too bad, but we could just really continue to see significant growth if we could get these businesses the workforce that they need. So not only are we working with them with manufacturing 4.0, which infuses technology and automation into their company. So that's a program that we stood up to work with them. They helped us design that, and especially small to medium-sized manufacturers that sometimes don't have the funding to implement and infuse technology and innovation. And it's really important that they do, because they're the supply chain for our larger manufacturing companies that are also doing the same thing. And it's just a route they have to look at until we can solve the workforce issue. So we've put some resources into that, and as well as we're doing on-site visits with our manufacturers, just businesses in general, all across the state. We're doing assessments with my team across all of the different agencies to talk about, you know, where their need is, what programs we have, and how we can work together with them to help solve the issue. And then we are investing in Iowans to help them get the skills that they need and kind of play matchmaker in pointing out the various opportunities for great careers that exist in every single corner of the state. You know, today, Jeff, we have 85,500 job openings, great jobs, careers in the state of Iowa. So tremendous need, tremendous opportunity, and we're just trying to just attack this at every possible method that we can to help get them that pipeline of talent that they need and really let other businesses outside of the state of Iowa know that Iowa is a great place to do business. In addition to that, it's a great place to live, work, and raise family. So I think we have an opportunity with some of these other states being shut down because we did remain open and we do promote freedom and liberty and our kids are in school. We've got not only people, maybe Iowans that have left, taking a second look at Iowa and considering moving back.
I spoke by phone with Governor Kim Reynolds on Thursday, September 30th. Coming up, a product that adds life. You're listening to the Iowa Business Report. The Iowa Business Report is presented by Advance Iowa and its Family Business Center, presenting another event in the Virtual Breakfast Series on Friday, October 15th, on finding and keeping key non-family employees. To learn more or to register, go to advanceiowa.com and click on the Family Business Center tab. For more than a century, the Atlantic Bottling Company has produced various beverages, most notably Coca-Cola. In this week's business profile, we'll introduce you to Kirk Tyler of Atlantic Bottling, who shares how the family company got started and how it has grown generation to generation.
Well, Jeff, it's a lot of fun to share our story because it starts 111 years ago, 1909, down in Villisca, Iowa. And my grandfather, Harry, and his brother, Henry, started our business, Tyler Brothers, and we were actually in the ice cream business. And we had our own line of soda flavors. We had about 18 different kinds of soda flavors. orange grape, strawberry, root beer, cream soda, ginger beer, ginger ale, all those kind of things. And then the ice cream business. And the ice cream business got to be so good. In 1912, they bought a creamery down in Clarinda, Iowa, which is just south of Villisca. And they were going through the warehouse of the creamery, and they found a safe, and they opened up the safe, and lo and behold, here's a franchise for Coca-Cola in the safe. And back in 1912, nobody really up in this part of the country knew what Coca-Cola was, because it started in 1886 down in Atlanta. We started making some Coca-Cola, and we actually had to make some, and then we'd put a couple bottles of Coke in with the case of orange or whatever other flavors they had, just to get people to try it. Then people would take the Coke out and say, no, I want my soda flavors. But it grew and grew, and pretty soon they were pretty good in the soft drink business. And in the late 20s, they sold the ice cream business to Metal Gold at the time. They got half in cash and half in stock. And a good thing we got half in cash, because in the late 20s, you know what happened in 1929? Everything went bust, and they actually got about half of what they thought they were going to get for the business.
I love the part about these add-ons or throw-ins. Sometimes you make a business deal and you just don't know what gets thrown in. A Coca-Cola recipe gets thrown in, and that becomes your primary business.
That's right. So they progressed in the soft drink business for quite some time. And fast forward to the late 40s, at the time the family had plants in Atlantic, Creston, Shenandoah, and Grand Island, Nebraska. And an estate planner came to my grandfather and his brother and said, this business is getting too big for one family. You need to divide it up. And fortunately, all four plants were valued about the same amount. Fortunately for us, my grandfather and his brother got along very well. So they literally drew straws to see who would get which two plants. And fast forward to the mid-70s. My father and my grandfather got a call from the Coca-Cola company. A man by the name of Don Keogh, who was president of the company at the time, called him up, and he's originally from Sioux City area. So they knew Mr. Keogh, and he called him and said, say, we'd like you to consider purchasing the Des Moines Coke franchise, which at the time in the mid-70s was one of the two worst Coke plants in the country. It was Des Moines and Buffalo, New York. It was really run down, and we were tired of having people come to Des Moines from Atlantic and come back to Atlantic and say, geez, we tried to find a Coke and couldn't find one. And so very fortunate for me, one of the requirements for them buying the Des Moines franchise was one of them was going to have to move to Des Moines. And they were both small town guys. And they said, well, if that's part of the deal, we're not interested in it. But we know somebody who would be interested in living in Des Moines in a few years. And that was me. So I was very fortunate that they took the opportunity to buy the Des Moines franchise, because probably if they hadn't have taken that chance back then, we probably wouldn't be in business, because we would have been so small. We just wouldn't have been able to operate with the scale. So we operated in the Des Moines franchise, built it up. At the time we bought it, we were getting outsold by our primary competitor about 8 or 9 to 1. Today we get outsold, just depends on what part of town, but overall, they sell 3, we sell 2. So we've made a lot of progress there, built it up. We had heard a rumor that maybe they were going to refranchise some of the territories. So in April of 14, my father and I took a trip down to Atlanta and met with a few folks and told them we didn't know what the process or the protocol was. We didn't know if it was true, but if it was true, we wanted to be part of the system of the future. We wanted a little more territory. And at the end of the meeting, they said, you fellas might think a little bit bigger. And so August of 2015, they came back to us and said, here's the territory that we would like you to consider. And it was most of the state of Iowa, excluding far western Iowa. And then we had a little bit of Wisconsin, a little bit of Minnesota, a little bit of Illinois, and a little bit of Missouri. And we were, wow, we don't know if we want to take that on, but we talked about it, and our family talked about it quite a bit, and really we decided, you know, if we can make a difference in those territories, we should do this. And it was fortunate that my father and grandfather took the chance on the Des Moines franchise, and if we don't take the chance on this franchise, is it fair to the next generation? But we'll give you the parameters, but you're going to run it like yourselves. And of course, I'm sure you've talked to other people, and some people really embrace that, and some people are scared to death of it. But we had some great people that said, I'm going to show you what we can do. And it's been a great ride since then.
Now, you're third generation, right?
I am.
And you've already talked about setting things up for the next generation. Talk,
correct,
if you will, about how it worked, because it was a family operation with brothers.
Right.
And then it became,
right,
your grandfather and your father, and then you're brought in. How have you handled the transitions? Because mixing business and family sometimes can lead to, well, rather quiet Thanksgiving dinners in the future. So how have you been able,
yeah,
to make it work?
I'm probably the luckiest guy alive, Jeff, because I'll go back to when my grandfather was starting his estate planning, and my father had a sister. My father was in the war, came back from World War II, started working in the business, and my grandfather said, okay, I just want you to know that if something happens to me, I'm going to split the company 50-50. And my father looked at him and says, well, you know, it's your money, it's your company, you can do whatever you want with it, but if that's the way it's going to be, I'm going to go look for another job. Said my grandfather, well, you can't do that. And he goes, well, why are you going to do that? He says, well, somebody's got to be in control. So they set it up to where he was going to get 51% of the company and his sister the 49. And so he always remembered that. And so when it came time, I was very fortunate where they made me president of the company when I was 35 years old and gave me some support and everything. But I had a father that was very considerate, very thoughtful on, okay, I've been running the business for day to day and everything. I don't want to do that anymore. You do that, and I'll just meddle when I can in the policy issues. I was fortunate to have a lot of good people that I worked with and grew up with, and we ran the business together. But if there was any issues or whatever, I could go to him, and there's not too many things that he hasn't seen before. I took full advantage of that.
Kirk Tyler is president of Atlantic Coca-Cola Bottling Company. More information is at atlanticbottling.com. And that brings us to the close of this week's program. We're back again next week at this same time. In the meantime, you can listen to all or part of today's program by going to totallyiowa.com and clicking on the radio programs link. And we're also found on all the major podcast distributors, 19 now in all. We welcome your comments. Send them by email to radio@totallyiowa.com. I'm Jeff Stein. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you have a prosperous week.
The Iowa Business Report is a copyrighted production of Totally Iowa Media, which is solely responsible for its content. For more, click on the radio programs button at totallyiowa.com.